Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's essential prenatal multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're continuing our expectations series today, talking about two Ravens that will play different, but hopefully both important roles in this coming season, Derrick Henry and Robert Longerbeam. Joining me to do that is Brad McGowan. Brad, how you doing?
Ken, I'm doing great. I love this preview series you do every year. It gets me excited for the season, and I just love having daily content on the different players.
Definitely a lot of fun to do. We go into a little more depth on this show. If you haven't listened to any of these before, it's worth maybe going back and listening to some of them if you like this one. And what we try and do is get a bunch of different perspectives on to essentially take a cross-sectional view, meaning multiple people get their opinion posted out here, on what the Ravens' position group strength is through the lens of a single player. So today we're going to talk about, as we mentioned, Robert Longerbeam. So I'm sure we'll get into some of the ancillary cornerback issues that go along with him, a sixth round draft pick this year. And we'll also talk about Derrick Henry in the second part of the show. So Brad, thanks for joining me. Let's jump right in with Robert Longerbeam, the sixth round pick out of Rutgers, played 5 years of Big Ten football.
Yeah, I watched some of the tape on Robert. I think, you know, a lot of people have said he profiles more as a slot guy the Ravens drafted two cornerbacks in the sixth round, Longerbeam and Bilal Kone. And Longerbeam is the smaller, more agile of the two that profiles better probably as a slot cornerback in the NFL. You know, he had tape playing in and outside, inside and outside. I thought he, you know, did some good things. Obviously, he is a late round pick, so expectations can't be incredibly high that he's going to come in and make an immediate impact. But a good depth piece and a good, you know, someone to groom for hopefully as a future contributor for sure.
Yeah, I think in the case of these two sixth round picks, trying if one of them were to work out, the team would be very happy with that. They got two sixth round corners, and each of them it has some warts, and we'll go through that as we talk about Longerbeam a little bit. Who's only 175 pounds, he's 5'11" and has 31.5-inch arms, that's a little bit unusual that a player will have longer arms like that. I'm hearing some clicking on your end there, Brad. I wonder what that's from. So anyway, we'll keep going here. I think he may have the length to stay outside, but the change of direction and his size and speed combination says slot corner. He ran a 4.39 40. He's a guy who brings some physical traits that you ascribe more to that slot corner position.
Yeah, and you don't. Anytime you can get a guy that runs sub 4.4, I think you're excited about that. I looked up his RAS score; it was in the 8.5 range out of 10, so it's pretty solid for an athletic profile. He and Kone had very similar RAS scores, to be frank. I think, you know, I was looking at your notes and noticed how you. Like the high side comparison would be a Tavon Young type. And that was the thought that came to mind to me as well. A guy that was drafted that was thought of as a slot corner and was forced into action in his rookie season and performed admirably on the outside and was a good player for a few years before getting injured. Obviously, the team talks a lot about how you can never have enough corners and you're fighting injuries. You're fighting, prolific passing attacks these days. And so just having these guys that can come in, that can grow with the program is paramount to being able to field the type of defense the Ravens want to play. And so, you know, Longerbeam actually is, to your point on the slot aspect, most of the other depth corners that they have profile better as outside corners. They're bigger, more of the aircraft carrier type that we talk about. But, you know, the Ravens will have an interesting sort of deployment decisions to make regarding the defense in the slot, given the loss of Ardarius Washington and how that will impact their flexibility to potentially do some of the things they had hoped to be able to do now that he's hurt.
Yeah, very, very significant injury for the Ravens, obviously. I think it also impacts just about every defensive back on the roster in terms of what will happen them and what their role might be. Longerbeam potentially could be significantly aided in terms of making the team by the fact Washington is out. They're down a slot corner. Humphrey has to play more slot probably, which means Humphrey less on the outside, which means the Ravens need more outside corners. He's in a competition with primarily, I'd say, with JAD and Kone, who between the two of them may get two spots or may only get one. And TJ Tampa is the other guy in there who Voss made the point yesterday on Friday Morning GM, you know, might be a player who would move to safety to help the Ravens fill a very deep hole there and there. It could also be Humphrey, but Humphrey, I think you're probably giving up on his cornerback career a little bit too early with Tampa. I'm not sure. One of the knocks on him was a lack of speed coming out in the draft. That's one of the reasons he lasted as long as he did to the Ravens. So, it seems actually pretty reasonable to me right now when the other options are go to the market, try and find a younger cast off player who's a multi-year solution or an older player who is a 1-year band-aid solution. I'm looking at this team right now. I would love for them to be able to find a multi-year solution that doesn't break the cap.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. One of the things that you've talked about a lot, and that has come up on the show, is how valuable it is to have multiple safeties that can allow flexibility in how you deploy the defense, and being able to use players like Hamilton in the slot or in the dime position, and still trusting the back end of the defense won't fall down like it did last year under Eddie Jackson's purview. But the idea of moving one of these corners to the free safety role, we talk about it a lot, but it doesn't seem like the kind of thing Baltimore has done frequently. Let me say it a different way. It seems like it would be something they would be more readily willing to go to, given some of the defensive deficiencies that they've had in filling that pure back end role. But, you know, so I guess I am curious how they make that decision exactly and what goes into that.
Right. So probably a lot, but with a younger player, it's probably easier to convince them to move to safety if it's going to really result in playing time. With an older player, that player has to be convinced their career's over at cornerback. And so with Chris McAllister, the Ravens never got to that point, but McAllister was saying for a while, he's still got 8 years left to play in this league, 4 more at corner and 4 more at safety after that kind of thing. When he was about, I want to say he was about 28 when he said that kind of thing, didn't end up being true. And with the Ravens, he lost his job actually very suddenly in the 2008 season in John Harbaugh's first year with the team. But the other guy who it did really work out for is Rod Woodson. And Rod Woodson, yes, came to the Ravens as a corner, and they moved him. And boy, did they get the timing right on that move, because he was a great safety. And his time with the Ravens was great. And then he still had good years after he left the Ravens, and he moved on to, what was it, San Francisco, and then Oakland, right, at the time. So he had a big play or two against the Ravens, I want to say, in that 2003 game when he was with them. So he's still in the league at that point.
Wow. I didn't remember that he actually played post his Baltimore career. I thought he ended up. He's obviously the gold standard. And I believe I remember in the 90s, the NFL released, their all pro team, like their forever all pro team. 75-year
team. Yeah.
Yeah. And Rod Woodson was one of the cornerbacks. So he was a great, great player on the outside before moving to safety. We've talked about the possibility they could do that with Humphrey, and Humphrey has talked about that. We don't know exactly when that would come. One of the things that I think about when I think about Humphrey as a safety is his very first preseason game. I remember that Baltimore was playing the Saints. I think Humphrey had been injured early in the preseason, and so it wasn't the first game for the Ravens, but it was his first preseason game. And I just remember them running a swing pass to the outside and him coming downhill from 10 yards and just really sticking the receiver at the line of scrimmage and put his face in there. And I thought, okay, we have a guy here. He's always been a really physical player. But, it'd be he would be suitable on that back end. But a lot of this conversation back to longer beam, we're assuming Chido Awuzie can play on the outside. But, we don't know what he's going to look like or whether he's going to be able to stay healthy. So, could be that they need Humphrey on the outside.
Yeah, very well could be true. Awuzie comes in here, and at least he had a good year last year. I think that if you want to point back to the Rock Ya-Sin acquisition as being one that didn't work out for the Ravens, you got to also realize he wasn't really very good before he came here. Also, Ronald Darby had been benched twice in the season previous to coming to the Ravens, then played the best year of his career, then went to the Jaguars and was terrible again. Right. So it's weird, but I hope that they can reverse the trend of Eddie Jackson coming here and playing poorly with somebody they bring in, vet safety, hopefully, but also maybe, Awuzie would be a good player to start with Pagano really helping them assimilate to the Ravens system. or really helping them assimilate to the Ravens system and become, you know, better players than they have been in their recent careers within a highly structured system where they can, you know, still make plays, hopefully.
Right.
Let's talk a little more longer beam, because we kind of let it get away from that a little bit. His very real ball skills. Now, he had 42 total passes defense. That's 5 interceptions and 37 PDs, which are not counted in college stats. Among interceptions are not counted among PDs. In 53 college games, and it's actually in his last 48 college games, because he had none in his first five. If you look at his interceptions, it's a nice mix of zone and man interceptions. So he has a capability of doing both of those things. So I think they got him largely as a ball skills guy. I mean, there's some speed there, and there's some things they like, and there's, you know, they're banking that the lack of size is not going to be a factor, but I think the ball skills are something to get excited about.
Yeah, I did. I participated in some of your draft coverage, which was very enjoyable. And on that show, I shared that from my perspective as someone rooting for the team going into the draft that doesn't watch as much film as some of your other panelists, the thing that I was really interested in is, can they get guys on defense that can help generate turnovers in the playoffs? That's been a bugaboo for the Ravens in the Lamar era. And so obviously we're not expecting a sixth round pick to come in and make a significant defensive contribution in year one, but those ball skills and the ability to produce, and, you know, frankly, against some really good competition. He played in the Big Ten. He was playing against Ohio State and Penn State, and the talent that they put out at receiver in the Big Ten is, you know, really, I mean, Ohio State's been pumping out grade one prospects for a couple of years now. So, you know, he got to go up against a lot of big time receivers, and the fact that he was able to generate that sort of production, I think it bodes well for his potential.
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, the pedigree is solid. It's better than Kone in terms of what he's done past in his career. His coverage metrics, and we have to talk about these because they're not outstanding in 2024. They're kind of middling. This is Big Ten. His yards per target are 6.6. That's the 59th percentile. So that would be a really good pro number, by the way, but a 6.6 number for a draftable cornerback is not particularly high. And what I did is I looked at all of the cornerbacks with 300-plus coverage snaps in determining these percentile rankings. His opposition passer rating was 73.3. You'd figure that to be very good, but it's the 68th percentile because college passer ratings are a little lower, generally speaking. Coverage snaps per target was 6.35, so they went after him once every 6.35 pass plays. That was in the 25th percentile. I think there's a reason for that, too, and we'll get back to that in a minute. His penalties per coverage snap were in the 40th percentile, so that's not good. His yak per reception was in the 16th percentile. Now, he's had a lot of problems tackling, so we probably need to come back and hit on that a little bit. It's one of the real deficiencies he needs to address. I had 11 missed tackles this last year and a 20.4% missed tackle rate, which was in the 13th percentile. And then his stops weren't particularly good either, in the 21st percentile. And for a guy who plays some slot, and he was much more than that, he really, one thing, if you look at his snaps by game, you see a mix of LCB and RCB on a game by game basis. Like he's playing 20 or 30 snaps at each for each game. What that tells me is that he's following the opposing team's number one receiver wherever they go on the field. And it's not a matter of they're not using the Ravens system effectively of sticking him on one side, leaving him there, and letting the offense make the choice of what matchup they want. They're making sure Rutgers was that they matched up as well as they could with the number one receiver of the opponents. And that is a reason why his coverage metrics would have been dinged generally, is that he had to face number one receivers a lot. And I think that's a big asterisk that goes with some fairly mediocre overall coverage statistics.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Obviously Rutgers is not a Big Ten powerhouse like Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. And so, you know, if he's their best cover guy traveling the field, and it seems that would be the most likely scenario, then he's going to face a lot of targets. They're going to try to get it to their best guy. And the fact that, you know, the metrics aren't fantastic, but you know, the physical skills and the ball production are good. I think the tackling is something that we, you know, when I think of the undersized slot guys that have been really successful in Baltimore, Tavon Young, Lardarius Webb, like those guys were very solid tacklers. And that's something that Humphrey has brought to the table when he's in the slot. And obviously Kyle Hamilton is second to none when it comes to the tackling aspect. And so, you know, if he wants to get on the field, that's probably the area that I would look at most that was going to have to demonstrate improvement in, you know, as he grows with the team. You know, and the coverage, I hope that's going to have to improve at the NFL level as well if he wants to get on the field. But, you know, he's a young guy. He's got room to grow. And yeah, excited to see how he looks once the pads come on.
Yeah, I think one of the other things that can't be forgotten because of how important it is to younger players, he needs to be able to tackle in order to play special teams well. And so he's going to have to be able to cover kicks and cover punts. And so doing that just requires tackling.
Right.
And he'll have to, you know, figure out that component of the game. They may not use him on punt coverage, but I think it's very likely they'll use him on kickoff coverage. And the new kickoff rules are going to, with the punitive 35-yard line start for touchbacks, means there's going to be a lot more returns this year. So we're not going to see, you know, 70% of the ball, the 70% of the time the ball is kicked in the end zone. That's going to be a last resort. It may occasionally still be the play that teams use to take risk off the table at the end of a game. But I don't think it's going to be something that's done fairly often as the first option, which means a lot more returns and a lot more necessary tackling from your coverage guys on kickoffs.
Right. Yeah. That's a very good point. And when we get to the good and great perspectives on a season for him, I think, you know, looking at my notes and your notes, one of the, you know, one of the foundational components of a good season for him is special teams contribution. So that tackling is going to have to get better.
Let's jump right into that. We're 20 minutes in here. What makes a good season for Robert Longerby from your perspective?
Well, first, I think he, you know, in the preseason, he needs to look like he can play a viable slot role on the defense. I think that enables him to make the team. And then I would say for a good season, he would probably start getting regular game day activations to contribute on special teams. And then I put down that he sees, you know, some game action in mop-up duty or towards the end of the season, just in a bit role here and there where he can demonstrate that he might have something that the Ravens can build upon for future seasons.
Okay. Mine is very similar. I'll just read it directly. Stays healthy in the preseason and plays well enough to take no worse than the fifth cornerback spot on the 53. So that would mean he probably beats out JAD. I think the chances are pretty good because JAD has used up 3 years of his cheap contract. And frankly, at the end of this year, the sand is out of the hourglass entirely. At the end of camp, he's effectively a lame duck corner who isn't going to generate the Ravens a comp pick or anything like that. So it's just a matter of, do you trade him then? Do you take a chance on a younger guy? And JAD would really have to significantly outplay Longer being in Kone to get the role. That those guys also could be sent to the practice squad, Longer being in Kone, and probably would slip through at least initially. But as we talk about on this show a lot, the replacement level at corner drops over the course of the season. And you're at risk of losing them more and more as time marches forward. So you need to get that guy up on the roster if you want him there in the future. I think he's got to be a solid special team performer with speed and an improvement in tackling for a role on the kickoff coverage unit. And I'd like him to get a limited trial, very similar to you. Less than 100 snaps, I think, is reasonable this year. 65, maybe. On defense in 2025, but I'd like to see him play some. If he plays a lot, it's probably not a good thing for the Ravens at all. It might be a good thing for him, But we're not looking for a long trial of Robert Longerbeam on the outside in 2025.
Yeah, agreed.
How about a great season? What does a great season look like?
Great season, building obviously on everything that we mentioned in the good season. But I put down that he proves enough in the preseason that he's unquestionably active on game day as a special teams contributor. And then I put that he pushes for the fourth corner spot ahead of Tampa, JAD, and Kone. You know, it's not out of the question. Like you mentioned, JAD's the sand is out of the hourglass. We haven't really seen Tampa or Kone on the field as contributors. So it's not outside of the realm of possibility that Longerbeam of those four guys looks best in the preseason and pushes for that spot. I don't think it's likely, but hey, that would be a great season for him.
That would be a great season. I have similar things. Makes the 53, and it's not clear if he should be cornerback 4 or 5. So he plays as well as Tampa and better than JAD and Kone in the preseason. Circumstances arise, at least in part due to his own preseason flash, that he sees an unusual extended trial for an R6 rookie that includes more than 100 snaps. So that would be really unusual for him to get in there and play 150 snaps, say. If it was more than that, again, I think it'd be really bad for the Ravens. And again, it could be very good for him,
right?
If he got that kind of thing. Special teams play is solid and activations are regular by midseason. So, you know, there's a lot of potential paths for Longerbeam to make the team. He could start on the practice squad, get elevated 3 times, then be elevated to 53 because the Ravens start to get nervous about losing him after he's played decently on special teams or whatever. And then he could you know, push for playing time at that point. He could start the season on the roster. He could start the season on injured reserve if he doesn't stay healthy during the preseason as one of those 2 spots, then come back during the middle season as kind of a scheduled replacement for some other players. I'm not keen for any IR solution because I think it'll take away too much from the developmental value of the year. And I just don't think I could classify it as a great season if he's a midseason replacement, but the Ravens love to do that. So right. that certainly is a possibility. And whatever the case, I think it's a great season if he's a significant component of the 2026 roster decisions. If they're really saying, you know, in a positive way, that we don't need to draft another corner this year, or we can just draft another 6th-round corner just to kind of keep the treadmill going because we don't really need to replace Kone. We've got one young guy we still think is developing. No need to get 2 this year. And, you know, maybe TJ Tampa's doing so well. And they don't even – presumably JAD will be gone either before the year starts or at the end of the year, and they're good with Kone as far as moving forward. So I think that would be a great year.
Yeah, good with Longerbeam. And Kone, or Kone.
But, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah, that's good point. Good point.
Yeah,
this happens all the time. By the way, I say the wrong name.
I know. You're doing so many of these that you're, you know, you're talking about all of these guys constantly. So it's totally understandable.
I don't know if you were on when they were talking about the bingo card. Did you?
Oh yes. Oh okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So one of the things was that I have a tendency to call a lot of defensive linemen, Brandon Williams, but really Broderick Washington happens all the time. And yes. First of all, I apologize, Broderick, if you ever listen to the show. I am talking about you if I'm talking about a current Raven generally.
Yeah.
And anyway, that was a fairly funny thing, and I took it the right way that I have some extremely loyal listeners. I appreciate you guys tuning into the show so regularly. Let's move on and talk about Derrick Henry a little bit. The biggest UFA signing, certainly of the 2024 offseason, but prior to 2024, obviously, and then gets another big extension after the 2024 season. I don't know how the season could have gone any better for Derrick Henry than it did, but I can read you what I had for a great season last year, and you'll see that he completely left it in the dust. I'll read it right now.
Yeah, read it. Yeah.
A great season in 2024. Plays 16-plus games. Check. A yards per carry of 4.6 or higher. Career high 5.9. Check. Success rate of 53% plus. 58.8% was his career high. Check. Fumbles no more than 2 times. Okay, fumbled 3 times. But he had a lot of carries, so that was okay. In addition to quality pass blocking, he returns to 7.5 yards per target. He actually did check as a receiver, including some value on extended plays where he begins as a blocker. Don't know if I could go that fine on that. Use with the mesh slash Jackson improves per play running of both players as well as the play action game. Double check on that one in terms of how he helped the passing game. Hill, Ali, and Mitchell all have limited playing time because of his success. Check. passing offense takes a step forward in per play productivity from 2023 with Lamar and receivers benefiting both from Flowers attracting safety help and more effective play action with Henry slash Lamar. I think we get that one. And here's the one that didn't come through. That's the killer. The Ravens benefit from his presence in the postseason with another trip to at least the AFC championship game.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing that I wrote down in my notes in preparation for this is, when thinking about the good and great season, you often, explain to the listener that good season is the 60th percentile and a great season, the 80th percentile. And I just wrote down that Henry's season last year was probably in the 95th to the 99th percentile.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Yep.
Yeah. I was just, as you were reading the great season and then commenting about, if he had 4.6 yards per carry and he averaged 5.9, it was remarkable how productive he was and how efficient. It was his most efficient season as well.
Yeah.
And it was just, he's just such a unique runner. I think the biggest concern that any of us have is the age cliff, the notorious age cliff for running backs. And, he seems to be the outlier. And is that something you can bank on? I don't know, but there were three things that I wrote down that I think make him unique. And I wonder if they also are things that age well. So the three things that I wrote down is his physicality. Everyone obviously knows Henry is a load and is, and just the way that he's physical and can stiff arm people to the ground is incredible. The elite long speed. The Ravens have not had a home run hitter at running back since early Ray Rice days. I was thinking about that, but even I just recall the Seattle game where Mitchell broke out and he had that great run off the right side and where he cut back to the middle and then he just ran out of gas and fell over and got caught. And he ran a 4.37. Like, I understand he's really fast, but just the way that Henry just gets going is so remarkable. But the thing that I think about as it relates to that long speed is, some of the most elite sprinters in the world are in their 30s. And so there is something about the long speed that can sustain age better than maybe the burst or explosiveness. I don't know. This is just maybe something I was thinking about as to why he can continue to do what he does. The third thing that I wanted to speak about that I think is remarkable about him is the way that he sets up his blocks and the way that he can sort of like change running angles at that high speed. And rewatching his highlights. It was just remarkable to see how when the Ravens ran that toss play so often last year, and I have never seen that play successful. Like, the toss plays don't work in the league anymore, but the way that he is able to just set up the blocks and like use a block. Like I'm just thinking of a specific play where Linderbaum is out in space blocking a guy and the safety is coming down and he just he leans inside to get the safety caught up in the wash and then just boom, cuts outside and gets 15 more yards. And like the way that he does that is just remarkable. And I think the vision that he has and the ability to exploit that space is just so remarkable. So
there is lots to love about him. There's no two ways. From a stylistic point of view, from a what he's doing at this age, I will say Lamar Jackson and the Ravens offensive line to a lesser degree both tremendously helped him in 2024. So I do want to go through some of that stuff because he had a 46% success rate in his last 3 years at Tennessee. And that's effectively how often is he keeping the team up with the required position to be ahead of the sticks, we'll call it, to be on pace for a first down.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone, all with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support. Natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a 1-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
That went up to his career rate was 49.3%, which is not bad, but it ain't nothing like what he had last year at 58.8%. The all-time record holder in that category is Gus Edwards at 57.4% within his time with the Ravens. Now, he actually had a little bit of a downer of a year this last year with San Diego, which reduced that number. I haven't looked at the at the career totals again sits. But the turnaround at age 30 for Derrick Henry is utterly remarkable. I've never seen anything like it. We were watching the show Hacked. I don't know if you like that show, but it's the Jean Smart gets a late night show when she's in her late 60s. So it's kind of a good show, and she's got a writer as the other main character in the show, and she's talking to Rosie O'Donnell, and she says, "Look, you didn't just which got this show. It's not just a matter of you got an opportunity. It's you got better." And that doesn't happen to comedians our age. And it was basically pointing to the fact that this writer had really helped her. And Lamar Jackson is Derrick Henry's writer. And the offensive line is the rest of the writing room in terms of how they got it done for Derrick Henry this year. A couple stats to back that up. He did have 3.6 yards after contact per attempt, which I think was about fifth or sixth in the NFL this last year. Fifth in the entire NFL. But here's the big difference. Last year with Tennessee, he was contacted on average 0.9 of a yard past the line of scrimmage. This year with Baltimore, this last year, 2.3 yards past the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of that is Jackson, because misdirection is a big part of what makes the Ravens run game so effective. But some of it's also the offensive line. So when you talk about the Ravens offensive line being a crappy run blocking line, and they are a better pass blocking line than a run blocking line, then it's even Daniel Faalele and whatnot. He's not killing the Ravens in terms of what's happening with the Ravens run game. And right. That's why I don't think the Ravens, in Faalele's case, are in any hurry to replace him, by the way. Topic for another show, but that's there. Yeah. And I will say that just the gravitational impact of the Lamar Henry mesh point was a thing of legend. They didn't even need all the misdirection they typically throw at opponents. They ran a few less counters this last year because they didn't really have the great pull blockers to do that. They didn't have the great mobility from guard in particular. So they ran some center tackle counters, and they did run some guard tackle counters to less impact. But they really got away from that more. They got away from some of the jet motion, which meant that Zay Flowers wasn't needed to, could be used down the field in some ways that were good. And they're still able to get, Derrick Henry some outstanding, well-blocked opportunities. The 87-yard run he had in week 4, for example, that was all before contact.
Yeah.
And so it's fair to say that before contact number has a lot to do with Derrick Henry outrunning the defense as well. It's not just that they got him a great level 2 opportunity, but that was 0.23 of his total yards over contact for the whole year. So it was 6.3% of his yards before contact were in that single run.
Wow.
It's pretty remarkable when you think about it, but I guess it does happen. An 87-yard run for some running backs might be 6.3% of their total for a season, but you'd have to get 1,400 yards for it not to be, I think. But for Henry, who got 1,900 yards, you wouldn't necessarily expect that to be true.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. In watching his film from last season and going back and reliving some of those runs, it was interesting. I'm not the scene guy. You touched a little bit on this, but you really need Michael Crawford to come in and talk about this because he loves the run blocking. But it was just interesting seeing the various blocking schemes they used. It seemed like they could run almost whatever scheme they wanted, and Henry could make use of the blocks. He would find the holes, he'd hit the holes. And then, the biggest thing about Henry is once he gets going, he's really hard to bring down. And if you give him 2.3 yards past the line of scrimmage before contact, like, good luck.
I mean, it's a smaller man who's making that first contact.
Right.
So a lot of times it's going to be it's going to be a corner or a safety. And again, good luck, Minka. Trying to make that tackle. Patrick Queen, even better.
Yeah.
Trying to make that contact.
Well, speaking of Patrick Queen specifically, I believe coming out of the two end of season Pittsburgh games, there was talk in both games, Henry was a force in both games, both the second Pittsburgh game and then the playoff game. Mm-hmm. And they talked about defensively they were having the edges scheme to stop Lamar. They didn't want Lamar beating him on the keep. And I mean, Patrick Queen was just at Henry's mercy in both of those games. Like, they had no answer for Henry. And that was wonderful to see as a Baltimore fan, them just get pounded that way.
Yeah, they after that game, they picked up another inside linebacker in Malik Harrison, gave up on a Landon Roberts, who's a very good tackler. And I'm really looking forward to playing Pittsburgh again this year. I'm looking forward to what the Ravens will do, because they have really rolling the dice on some bad tackling in the middle of that defense if they'll get Harrison and Queen out there.
Right. Yeah, I'm really, really excited to see that. I mean, the other, you know, we've talked a lot about Lamar's obvious impact on the running backs that he plays with, and how much space he creates for any back that's back there. And, you know, we've on this pod talked about the geriatric backs of the 2022 season that they rolled out there and still led the league in rushing. They either led the league in rushing or rushing efficiency, but had a great rushing attack. But, you know, I wonder how much Henry also opens things up for Lamar. He had his best season as a passer by far last year. And Lamar was so terrific. And early in the season, you know, we mentioned how the line blocked really well last season, but at the beginning of the season, they were like rotating, you know, right tackle. Fa'alele was not the Fa'alele he would become. And so Henry really carried a lot of that early season load, helping them right the ship after the 0-2 start. And then really, you know, dominating the Cowboys game and the Bills game based on Henry's back. And I mean, Lamar obviously plays a huge role because he is the best player on the team. But, you know, together, I guess what I'm wondering is they're like a Batman and Robin, just build off each other. And so it was just wonderful to see. And I remarked a number of times last season as I was just watching the games, like how fun it was to have Derrick Henry on your team, just like steamrolling guys. Yeah.
It's certainly a lot of fun. I'll go through a few other statistics here from a positive standpoint. Career high 5.9 yards per carry, 19 touchdowns, 16 in the regular season, 3 in the playoffs. The gravitational pull with Lamar, the yards per target up to 8.4, his career record with Tennessee was not terrible at 7.2, but they got him more and better opportunities. There were two drops he had in the AFC divisional game, which is one of the only negatives I can find about the season, including one where it looked like he was free to get into the end zone.
Right. I remember that.
He did not have a great pass blocking year relative to his own past, but he still had a good pass blocking year for a running back in the NFL. If you look at the PFF scoring for pass blocking running backs, they probably centered around 54 or something. I mean, it's much lower than what it is for a lot of other positions. Wide receiver is the same way, by the way. So a guy in the 70s is really good. Well, Henry's in the low 60s, I think, as a run blocker, or right around 60 anyway. And that's quite good for a running back. If you're a fullback, you want that guy to be higher, but he did some pass blocking, and that was a positive. That's something he needed to do coming in. I did fumble 3 times, which is honestly still pretty good, but it isn't up to the 0 fumble standard yet as last year in Tennessee. And missed tackles force was first in the entire league at 89. So, I mean, that's just a great number all by itself. And when he's not the only running back having a great year. So Bijan Robinson had a completely overshadowed year, by the way, in the NFL. He set the all-time record for single season success rate. He's the first punt back ever to be over 60% in 300 carries. And I don't think anybody could tell you that. I don't think there is anybody outside of Atlanta anyway who could tell you that. And Saquon Barkley, of course, is as the season he had, it's remarkable that Henry and Barkley just completely eclipsed all of the running backs in the way they did. It's a little similar to what Achan and Keaton Mitchell did the year before to all other running backs in terms of having outstanding per touch productivity.
Right. I was jotting down. I was curious to get your take on this, but I was jotting down my favorite Ravens players that had like the prime of their career with another team and then came to Baltimore later.
Okay.
And I was trying to figure out where Henry ranks on this list. You know, I think the top is probably Anquan Boldin. For me, I loved Steve Smith Sr. But after those two, like Henry is already getting pretty high up there, I guess. You know, Rod Woodson, going back to the conversation yes. that we had about, Longerbeam, but you know, he's quickly rising the ranks of favorite players that came from other teams and spent, you know, latter part of their career here.
Okay. I got five guys.
Okay.
My first is Trevor Price.
A
guy who came in at mid career after playing very well with Denver, played very well with the Ravens as well. Elvis Dumervil.
He was Trevor Price was on the 06 team, right?
Yep.
The 13-3 team. That team, yeah. that defense was a phenomenal defense.
Yeah. So Rod Woodson, who you named, how about Sam Adams? If we leave him off this list, big mistake. Yeah. I have him above Siragusa, so I'm leaving Goose off, even though he had a fine career at the Ravens. Ravens, the Ozzie Newsome's amazing run of free agents that basically led to that 2000 championship is a thing of beauty. I mean, it's great drafting, but they also had a great run of free agency to couple with it, which was remarkable because they weren't in good cap shape and they still got a bunch of guys.
The story that Siragusa told on the Ravens, ESPN did the 2000, a feature on the 2000 Ravens where they had Siragusa interviewed before he died, but he told the story of, you know, going into to meet Mark Davis at the Raiders, and they offered him some sort of bonus, and then the next day, like, they lowered it when he didn't take it, and he was like, screw you, I'm going to Baltimore, and then he knocks out Rich Gannon in the playoff game. He tells that story.
Shannon Sharp, Michael McCrary, you can add to that list. Michael McCrary, you had a lot of his prime in Baltimore, but he had 13 sacks season, which made him a high value free agent. With Seattle, so, and played 5 years or 4 or 5 years there anyway before that. I want to get your thoughts on this before we get into a good and a great season for this year. Ravens really ran a two running back system with Henry, almost no RB3 carries this whole year. Mitchell and Ali got a few at the end of the year, but Mitchell's season, I mean, it's basically completely lost, and Ali's season doesn't give him any clarity or surety about a 2025 roster spot. So and they started the season by elevating guys from the practice squad for I think six consecutive weeks to get a third, basically a special teams player who was a running back and an emergency running back on the team. But everything went to, all the offense was Hill and Henry for a number of weeks. But here's the question that I want you to take your time answering with this is, has a team put themselves in a position where it's going to have difficulty re-signing their young core because of this contract they've given Derrick Henry? So the young core, when I'm talking about, is Hamilton, Linderbaum, Jones, Likely, and Owe. Those five guys, are undeniably competing for dollars, and Derrick Henry just took a bunch of dollars off the table. And I'm not saying it's a bad move because I really love Derrick Henry, but I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I think there is a nearly 100% chance that the Ravens retain Hamilton. Of the young core, I think he is unequivocally the best with the highest upside, and he's on a Hall of Fame trajectory. And so they will figure out, he is a cornerstone player, a Ring of Honor type player. They will figure out how to get him signed. The remainder of that young core, I would like to see all of them retained, but obviously the cap being what it is, that's unlikely possible. You know, what I have been mulling over is we often comment that you can get 80% of the player for 20% of the price. And this is something that, you know, people will say in regards to Derrick Henry, Lamar has produced, to your point, Gus Edwards had one of the highest career success rates when he was in Baltimore. And then he goes to LA last year and just looks like a very average player. And so Lamar in and of himself generates a top rushing attack. But one of the things I've been thinking a lot about is those truly great players that change the gravity of the field. I just think they are so valuable. And so why I am saying this is I don't know of the young core if any of those other guys are truly those kinds of players that the Ravens couldn't find someone to backfill them either in the draft or in free agency that they could groom into a solid contributor. The guy, I think, I mean, we've talked about this a number of times and you've shared on the podcast. I mean, Jones is someone that is really critical to the Ravens pass rush and terrifically important to the defense and is really grown into a force in the middle. And he's someone that I would love to see them sign, probably second on that list after Hamilton.
Okay, let's convert these each to a percentage chance for the five. I've got mine written down, but what do you, Hamilton, chance to re-sign him?
I think as near 100 as you can get without being certain.
Okay, I was at 95. Linderbaum.
Okay. I think the Ravens think incredibly highly of him, so I think the chance they re-sign him is probably closer to 75.
Okay.
My personal opinion is I would rate him probably lowest on this list of contributors.
Okay.
So that I would like to see re-signed.
Right. In terms of you liking to re-sign him. There is a leadership component to what he's doing. I just don't think it's a sure thing by any stretch. And I think the situation at center has gotten very complicated, not from anything Linderbaum did wrong, but basically there's a Deshaun Watson contract sitting out there for a center, Cam Jurgens, who's not very good. Mm. And, you know, it basically is abutting the highest contract out there for any center, which is Creed Humphrey, who is far and away better than any other center, including Linderbaum, by a mile in this league.
Right.
And so, you know, a reasonable number for Linderbaum, even if you include leadership factors and other things, might be $16 million per year. And Cam Jurgens is already gumming up the works with a $17 million AAV contract. There's nothing wrong with the amount given to Creed Humphrey. I just think that the Ravens need to exercise restraint in terms of the Linderbaum contract, and I hope they can get it back for I hope they get him back for between 17 and 18 after it's happened. But I'd really like them to get him for 16 because I think that's about where his value is. Anyway, my number is 60% on Linderbaum.
Do you think, sorry, I don't want to make this about Linderbaum, but from a team building exercise, do you see, I think they think really highly of him. There was one game last year in the beginning of the season where the broadcast said that in meeting with Harbaugh during the week, he said that like Harbaugh told them that they think Linderbaum will be a Hall of Famer. And okay, that's fine. I think you've talked a lot about how his pass blocking is the thing that holds him back. And that's the most important thing. I mean, he's a terrific run blocker, terrific leader to your point, but I would probably let him go at $16 million. Like if it were my decision, I just don't think his play warrants a cornerstone contract as a center. That's just my opinion, but
that's fair enough. And I'm probably imprinting some of what I think the Ravens would do in this situation. I'd want to really sit down and evaluate it. And particularly, you need to compare it to players like Jones and likely in Elway and see who's helping, who's doing more for the team.
Right.
I saw something on Reddit recently that basically they're basically 100% behind the notion that Linderbaum is way more important. I'm not in the same place. And I know I'm an outlier in that regard, although it seems like you might be even more. Nice to be centrist for one in regard to Linderbaum. But his season in 23 was so good from a pass blocking perspective. And it was such a change, figured that there would have to be a year of consolidated gains. And it was just more of a step backwards, more of a regression than I would have expected.
Right.
And now I don't know again who he is as a pass blocker. I don't have enough to go on. I think he's basically about average as an NFL center. in terms of his pass blocking. Maybe some of it is due to the guards who weren't very good next to him, or weren't particularly dominant next to him anyway. So I can understand that argument. I'm not sure I completely buy into the notion that it was all somebody else and not Linderbaum's basic characteristics and lack of size and whatnot that got this, caused this problem to happen.
Right. Yeah. And we did spend the first part of the Henry podcast or Henry analysis talking about how well the line blocked for him last year. So, you know, we can't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No, and some people would say it's all Lamar Jackson. It's not at all about the offensive line. And hey, look at Henry's season. Look at Lamar's season this last year. And it doesn't have anything to do with the offensive line. Those guys sucked. I don't really think that's true. I think that McCary and Fa'alele both came on to play good ball towards the end of the year. And right. I think a lot of credit is owed to George Warhop. It's the most amazing thing that both the defense and the offense got corrected basically after that week 10 game. Yeah. And they're all of a sudden they're playing at a much higher level really very, very good.
The Ravens have done that several times during the Lamar era where they've made a change.
Yeah.
2019, they did it when they brought Josh Vines back in Patrick Queen's rookie season.
Yep.
For the
second time. Okay, so let's go with Jones as the next player. What percentage of the Ravens re-signing him?
I am closer to 50%. To me, like after Hamilton, Jones is the most valuable of these players, but I just feel they'll have a hard time paying two defensive tackles top of pretty top money, pretty top of the market money. And so I would say probably 50 to 40%, but my desire would be much higher.
The total dollars that have to be put on the table for Jones are a lot less than they are for Linderbaum. So I think Travis Jones, you might be able to get him for between 10 and 12 million. And I don't know the exact amount, but if it's 60 to 70% as much as you pay for Linderbaum, I don't know how you justify the expense. Now, he plays a lot less snaps, but he's absolutely critical to the high leverage snaps on the defense in terms of being there as Matabike's running mate on third down and commanding double teams that create opportunities for the others.
Right. I mean, he's in large, what he is able to bring to the pass rush is in large part why you have guys like Kyle Van Noy getting double digit sacks at this part of their careers because of how much he can affect from the interior. I would be, if they were able to sign him for the 10 to 12 range, I would run that deal in right now. Like I would be shocked if they get him at that rate.
Yeah. There's still people out there who think he can be had for about 6 or 7 million.
Oh my gosh. Those people don't live in this world.
Yeah. But I would particularly, coming right on the heels of this is a bad pun, no pun intended here. The Ardarius Washington injury. There may be some players who are willing to say, you know what, let's go ahead and make a deal now, because Ardarius Washington really got set back by that injury.
That was so sad.
It's going to cost him a lot of money. And it's really a shame. I'm glad, I think he'll be back with the Ravens in 26 on a kind of a 1-year prove it deal, but the multi-year contract possibility is that's out the window at this point.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to Isaiah Likely. Chance they re-sign him.
I think they will try to keep him or Andrews. I would say about 50-50 again, 50% chance for Likely.
I would have been at 50 or maybe even 40%, because I think we're rapidly approaching a point where it appears like there may be a difference between Likely and the Ravens. But then I was reminded of the fact that Likely might make an outstanding franchise tag candidate next year because he's a tight end. So I'm at 60 because I think the team has some leverage to use the market frictions to get it done. And how about Adafi Owe?
I'd say closer to 20-25%. I think it's most likely the case that he's gone.
Okay, 20% is also my number. I think that the drafting of Green really made it so. If the Ravens wanted to have a great solid pass rush for years to come, sign Owe and have Green for the next 4 years, and you really got something. But I don't think they'll do that. I think they'll basically draft another guy next year and try and not pay top of the market pass rusher money when they have to be concerned about every dollar at every position. So,
yes. Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, let's get back to Derrick Henry now. What's a good season for Derrick Henry in 2024,
25? The good and great for Henry, I really struggled just because he was the 95th percentile season last year. But I put that obviously be healthy all 16 games or 17 games rather. I would really like for the Ravens to continue to be able to rely on him to close out games. I wrote down that I would like to see him have reduced carries. Under 300 would be great, and not because of any slowdown or any regression on his part, but because Mitchell is back and back to the Mitchell that he was in his rookie season, and they can kind of spread the wealth a little bit more. And then for the Lamar Henry dynamic to be one of the most diabolical offensive forces in the league, the mesh point. And then, I wrote over 5 yards per carry and around 10 double digit touchdowns is good season.
All right.
Given what he accomplished last year.
I backed it off a little bit. And some of this is age related, but I said plays 15 plus games with a yards per carry of 4.8 plus and a success rate of 53% plus. He's at 58.8. I think there's a good chance Lamar can keep him at a level like that. And 240 plus carries. That's 16 carries per game for 15 games. If he could do that, I think that would be very reasonable in terms of not overworking him too much. Gravitational impact on linebackers, inside linebackers, creates better underneath opportunities for tight ends and improves Lamar's success as a runner. Continues as an able pass blocker, regardless of any contributions as a receiver, and Ravens do not question the value of the extension. So if we're sitting here a year from now and we're not concerned that Derrick Henry is making too much money, that's a good thing.
Right.
And I think that may require higher than a 60th percentile season, but that's where I pegged it for these purposes.
Yeah, that I totally agree with that.
How about a great season?
So, great season. I very similar with the added caveats that his impact and is most felt as the weather gets cold and into the playoffs. I this is more anecdotal, but it felt to me last season that he really exploded onto the scene and then saved the Pittsburgh games down the stretch. He was less, I mean, the Ravens had, one of the best offenses of all time last year. So it's hard to nitpick, but I would really love for his impact to be most obvious in down for the stretch run. I put that they would remain the number one offensive efficiency team. It seems, weird to suggest that they be the best, but that's what they've been in the Lamar era when they're clicking on all cylinders. And Derrick Henry, if he's not contributing to that, then to your point, we're questioning the value of that contract. And then I put, I'm being a little bit ambitious, but continue over 5.5 yards a carry and 15 plus touchdowns. And then he staves off the proverbial running back cliff.
Okay. The last one is the most reasonable. The boy, man, there's so many people who are going to expect 1500 more yards from Derrick Henry this year. And anything right. else is a bust after his first year. Here's what I would say. Great season, plays 16 plus games, yards per carry of 5.1 plus, success rate of 56% plus. That's a very high number, folks.
Yeah.
The all time record for running backs was 57.4 through Gus Edwards' career here. So that's a high number, but he's got Lamar. He fumbles no more than two times. In addition to quality pass blocking, delivers 7.5 yards per target as a receiver. He did it last year. He could do it again. Hill, Ali, and Mitchell all have limited playing time because of his success. That's reasonable, and I had that in there basically last year as well, so let's hope that happens again. Passing offense takes only a small step backward in per-play productivity from the historic 2024 season, with the tight ends again, in particular, posting outstanding stats. So he's been a big factor in the Ravens' tight end success. Now, it's been a two-year success. He's only been here for one, but over the last 2 years, Lamar throwing to tight ends, 143.5 passer rating. And Derrick Henry is creating a lot of that space between level two and level three for tight ends to get open.
Right.
This is really in line with you, is the Ravens benefit from his presence in the postseason and make it to at least the AFC Championship game. They finish with a cold game at Green Bay, a cold game at Pittsburgh, and they very well could be playing in Buffalo again or somewhere else in the playoffs that's cold. They need to do the best they can in those games.
Right. Right.
All right. Brad, outstanding talking football with you. Always a bunch of fun. And I think this is a good discussion with a lot of rabbit holes we went down to. And always nice to do that with you. Where can people talk football with you online?
Yeah, I'm on X nowadays at MC Bradley. And I participate in a lot of the dialogue there and always enjoy Ravens content year round.
All right. Fair enough. Other folks out there, if you want to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. And I do have a lot of ideas that came in for that kind of stuff. I'm looking for some help on some analytics projects. If you want to be involved in an analytics project with me, hit me up, in particular if you know Java and Python and can work with the NFL FastStar database. Brad, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it, it's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.